This is the Tom Likas Show.
If you believe in God, you're probably not as smart as I am.
Now, from the New Normal Studios in Burbank.
It's fucking tunes.
Tom Likas.
Thank you for tuning into the Tom Likas Show. This is where you hear us live, Mondays and Fridays, 3 p.m. Pacific Time, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 24/7 at tom.show. You can hear us on our free app. Get it at the App Store. Get it at Google Play. Or get it at TomEverywhere.com. That's TomEverywhere.com. Thank you for tuning in. Thanks for being part of the program. We appreciate it. Here we are together again. It's you, it's me. It's a bonus hour of the Tom Likas Show. And I'm sitting here in studio with criminal defense attorney Adam Sachs. Good to see you.
Hey, Tom, what's up?
Not much. What's going on?
Not much.
What's going on in the world of the criminals?
Yes, I want to talk about criminal law. Now, this is very interesting. You know, people expect that because I'm a lawyer, you know, I'm a big supporter of the system. And I do believe that we have probably the best system in the whole world. I really believe, at least theoretically, in the jury system and the presumption of innocence and everything else. I think it's amazing. But at the same time, I'm not stupid. I know that it has some real limitations. Now, Tom, you'll find this really interesting. I don't know if you know this, but in certain legal systems, like in Canada when you're a lawyer, if you criticize the legal system, you can get in trouble. You're not supposed to, as a lawyer, disparage the legal system. Did you know that?
That's kind of treating it like the NBA. You can't criticize a referee.
That's great stuff.
Or you get fined.
Well, I don't know if you remember, but in the Senate, the Senator Elizabeth Warren was trashing Jeff Sessions to be the Attorney General.
Yes.
But he was a senator still at that time. And so you're not supposed to trash each other when you're a senator. So she was saying that he's a racist or whatever, but the point is that she was trashing a fellow senator.
Right.
And she got they literally told her to shut up.
Right.
They actually took her off. They said, sit down and stop speaking.
So, which backfired on them then she went on her own website or
well,
Facebook Live, and millions of people heard her read that letter from Coretta Scott King in its entirety.
Really made it worse.
Right.
The thing is, you know, I know that if you were to, you know, let's say work for like the NFL or these other kinds of things, kind of like what you were saying about advertisers, right? The radio station didn't want you to disparage certain products because they were advertisers or the parent company was an advertiser or whatever. Now, in the U.S., I am in California in particular. I'm not supposed to do things that bring bad repute onto the legal system. So I suppose that's some morality type of thing. But it's pretty loose, I think. And I don't mind criticizing the legal system because I think it is really screwed up in a lot of ways. Now, I have a lot of interesting cases where people tell me that they're innocent. And now everybody always says they're innocent. I know that.
That's right.
But I have certainly been handed a lot of cases where I sit there and read what's going on. And I talk to the, you know, I do my little due diligence investigation. I talk to the police and the other people involved. And, you know, I'm very thorough, Tom. And I realize that my client is actually innocent. And this is a fascinating thing. This is why I want to talk about this tonight. You know, it's not always what it should be. As you probably know, most people, watch television and they think that, you know, this is like Judge Judy and, Law and Order and so forth, which is fairly realistic actually as a show, but people think that most cases must go to trial and that, you know, all cases, you know, end up in these trials. And the truth is that that's actually less than 1%. And, you know, I'm in court doing cases all the time, but most lawyers are sitting in their office doing paperwork most of the time and don't go to court. Most lawyers are not litigators, and most cases get settled. Now, this is the question. If you're innocent, right, you want to fight it. I had a DUI recently, and the guy, basically, he was complicated, but he was innocent, let's just say. The evidence against him was not proper. There was a whole bunch of problems. And the question was, do we fight this or not? Now, there's an economic factor, which is, you know, can he afford to fight it? But, you know, I'm going to let that part go because I thought it was a justice issue at some point. So the money wasn't the first thing on my mind. But there's a risk. Now, there's an interesting case in federal courts, Tom. And this is, you know, people say, oh, federal court, guess what? If you get nailed for tax evasion, immigration stuff, certain kinds of crimes, you're going to end up, you know, banking, you're going to end up in federal court. And it's a whole different story. Now, there's a guy that I know, that got involved in a federal crime case, and he was being charged with fraud and a whole bunch of other things. And they sat him down, and they made the following offer, which, Tom, you won't even believe this, okay? Now, this guy was innocent. He swore to me, he told me the whole thing. I wasn't his lawyer, but I'm listening to him, and I objectively thought he was sounding pretty sincere. So they told him that if he takes a plea, that he's going to get a year and a half in jail. Okay? A year and a half. Now, that's a long time, but it's not the end of the world, right? A year and a half. You're in federal prison, so you're not going to get raped, okay? It's, you know, fairly clean and normal. It's not like the worst place in the world. You know, there was a joke they showed. By the way, Tom, you doing Money Monday yesterday, you told someone to watch Wall Street, which is a good movie.
Yeah.
But the real movie about penny stocks is The Wolf of Wall Street.
Yes.
That's the real killer.
Yeah,
I was
of course.
Thinking you should have recommended that one. That guy, in the end of the movie, ended up in a jail in Nevada that had tennis courts.
Right.
And there he is. And by the way, his cellmate was Tommy Chong from Cheech and Chong. And he was talking about, like, I went to this jail, and it was like sunshine and tennis courts, and, you know, it was like a resort, you know?
Huh.
It wasn't so bad. So anyway, so plead guilty and get a year and a half in jail, okay? Your parents, your family comes visit you, your wife, you know, whatever, waits for you, okay. But if you go to trial, right, because you're innocent, right?
Right.
And you go to trial, and by the way, the federal prosecutors have a conviction rate in the high 90s, okay? Like 96% or 97%. That's not a joke, man. That's pretty rough, Tom. I mean, if you're going to go to Vegas and I tell you, you know, it's 96% that you're going to lose all your money, you're going to question that. You know, that's worse than rolling the dice, man. So anyway, if you go to trial and you're innocent, that's fine. But if you go to trial, you get acquitted, which is only 4% chance, then you walk. Okay, fine. But if you get convicted, you're going to serve 20 years. 20 years. And the federal system doesn't have parole. So you're going to serve the whole thing. Okay, and there's some exceptions, but generally speaking, you've got to expect to serve most of the time that you're given in the federal courts. Now, if you get sentenced to 20 years, by the time you get out, your family, everyone that knows you has moved on. Okay, they've forgotten about you, even your children. Okay, if you go in when they're 15 and you get out when they're in their mid-30s, okay, you have missed their entire lives. Your wife is not going to wait for you 20 years. She's going to divorce you while you're in jail. Marry another guy, you're going to come out, you don't know anybody, you've been out of the employment for years and years, whatever you used to do is erased and gone, you're completely screwed. So think about this, think about the pain of this decision, of being, and I'm being sincerely saying, if you're sincerely and actually innocent, okay, and you go forward, and you take a plea, you serve a year and a half in jail, but then you're okay. You get out and you can get back to everything, as opposed to fighting it like on, you know, the champion, right? Always fights to the death, right? Fighting it and getting screwed, getting 20 years. It's a terrible, terrible choice. Now, there's a thing that they do in California, which is interesting, and I was just talking to a guy who did this. He committed a crime when he was a juvenile, and he was about 16 or 17, so he's right on the edge, okay? And there's a whole separate system for juvenile offenders. But in the end, if he went in as a juvenile and dealt with the thing and pled guilty or took a deal, he was going to end up in some kind of juvenile home and some kind of therapy thing and some kind of, you know, institution for you know, bad juveniles, and he could be there until he's 21. So what he did do, they recommended to him, he took a plea. This is with a public defender, which, of course, I don't recommend. But anyway, he took a plea at the time, and he pled as an adult, okay? And by doing that, he was put on summary probation. He literally walked out of the courthouse that day and was like, A-okay. But now he's trying to get his citizenship, and he's got this conviction hanging over him, which I'm going to help him expunge. That's another story. So again, you have this horrible Faustian choice between these two terrible things. If I plead guilty as a juvenile, then it stays in juvenile court. No one ever knows about it because it's sealed because you're a juvenile. But later on, it's going to make him have to go to this juvenile place until he's in his 20s, his early 20s, for years, because he's only 16 or 17. On the other hand, if he pleads guilty as an adult, he has a criminal record, but he goes home that afternoon. Okay? So this is the kind of crazy stuff that happened. Now, I've got a really interesting case now, which parallels this as well. This guy, my client, was driving, minding his own business on the freeway, and some guy, and it was like slow traffic or something, and some guy came up on the side, the shoulder, and was trying to like cut in front of him and sideswiped him, okay? Now, they pulled over, whatever, I guess they were kind of pulled over anyway, but they kind of went to the side, and this guy who hit him, my guy, the other guy, jumps out of his car and went ballistic. And starts screaming at him, like, with his fists, like, come on out, I'm going to kick your ass. And this guy got really scared, and I think justifiably so, and drove away and went to the police station and filed an accident report, okay? Well, lo and behold, the police determined that the other guy was completely at fault for the accident, which was true, but they charged my guy with hit and run because he left the scene of an accident without exchanging, you know, the, like, information with the other driver like you're supposed to. But on the other hand, what was he supposed to do? If he got out of the car, this guy was going crazy, you know, something really bad was about to happen probably. Would have been punched and fight and God knows what else would have happened after that. So they're charging with a hit and run. Now, they offered me what's called diversion, which means he pleads guilty, he does some anger management program, some other nonsense, fills out a few forms, pays a few small fines. We're talking a few hundred dollars. And then a year from now, we come back to court, and if he was a good boy for the whole year and didn't get in trouble again, it's dismissed, okay? So he doesn't have a record. But, Tom, the guy's innocent. Now, if I fight it, and we go to court, and we really deal with it, which is fair and square, and you've got the right in the Constitution, not even talking about how much it's going to cost in terms of legal fees, I'm just talking about doing it, okay? If he's found guilty, he could spend a year in jail, right? Now, you're going to feel pretty stupid spending a year in jail when you remember that you could have had diversion, but you're only going to realize that afterwards.
Right. Right.
You talk about stocks, you know, and I love stocks, but it's so depressing when you look at some of the ones that really exploded over the years. And by the way, Tom, there is one that was a penny stock that became a real stock again.
Akamai. Yeah.
I emailed this to you, right?
Yes.
Okay.
But how many penny stocks are there?
It's very rare.
You know, it's like winning Powerball.
Hold on.
Someone will win Powerball. It just isn't going to be me, and it isn't going to be you.
Okay. Well, I heard of Akamai from Steve Jobs, okay? At one of his demonstrations of his new products at Apple, he talked about Akamai and how he was partnering with them or something. And at that time, they were like a $40 stock, okay? And I bought it at $40. And it immediately went up to 80 and 90, and I thought I was a genius, okay? And I kind of did what you said, Tom. I did buy and hold.
Mm-hmm.
So I just left it in a portfolio. I never thought about it again, okay?
Right.
So it turns out that Akamai was founded by this Israeli guy, okay?
Yeah.
And you're not going to believe this, and I tell you this, Tom, but he was on one of the planes on 9/11 from Boston that crashed into the World Trade Center.
Really? Okay?
Yes. And he apparently was an Israeli commando. And he jumped one of the hijackers or something, and they stabbed him. They killed him. Okay, he was the chairman of Akamai. So after that, the stock went down to like 30 cents, Tom.
Yeah,
the brains was gone.
Well, that's like the day Warren Buffett dies.
Oh yeah,
you know, holding
that's gonna hurt.
Halfway, you're gonna take a ding.
Well, this guy died prematurely. I don't think, Buffett is a ripe old age, as far as I know. He's in his late 80s, I think. But anyway, this guy got killed, like I said, crazy. Akamai went down to nothing. And then I remember reading, I don't know what it's selling for at the moment, but it was literally less than a dollar, and then it went back up to like 50, 60. So there you go. That's possible.
Look at
that. Anything's possible.
It's possible, yes.
I mean, if you had put $100,000 into that, you would have had God knows $20 million. But you got to have a lot of nerve to buy a stock for 60 cents and hope for the things to improve.
Right.
Like buying Cumulus now would be a very risky endeavor.
But the thing about Cumulus is they are in a business that is leaving and never coming back. There's
right.
No way it's ever going to be fixed.
Well, you know, I got to tell you this. Talk about never going to be fixed. Okay. I really admire Michael Dell. Okay, he's the guy from Dell Computers.
Yeah.
And he was interviewed when Steve Jobs took over Apple, okay? Apple shares were $4 at the time.
Right.
And they asked Michael Dell, what do you think of Steve Jobs taking over Apple? And Dell said he should just give all the money back to the shareholders and close the company. It's a waste of time. It's never coming back. like you just said about Cumulus.
Well, but what I'm saying about Cumulus is it's the whole business.
No, I understand. Apple's
not that radio as a business.
I'm with you. They said Apple's business is gone.
It's like being in the Kodak camera business,
no,
okay?
It's
going away.
I understand, but it was what they referred to, what Dell was talking about with Apple, was how they were selling commodity products.
Right.
And that nobody gives a shit about them anymore, and Apple is going to go bankrupt. They're going to be gone, okay? And by the way, I remember seeing Apple at four. And I was always a fan of Apple. I used them when I was a kid. I had an Apple II or whatever. And I remember seeing Apple at $4 and saying, you know what? I should just buy 1,000 shares just as a goof. You know what I mean?
Right.
And then I read this thing from Michael Dell, and they were talking about how Apple was talking to bankruptcy lawyers. And they were talking about selling off the assets. Jobs later talked about Apple having a near-death experience, which was that. But anyway, that's an unusual story.
Understood.
So, the question you have to ask yourself, and this is something that is just absolutely unbelievable. I get calls from a lot of guys, as you know, and I do expungements for them, and they tell me, you know, I pled guilty, but I wasn't guilty. And I get a lot of people that call me, especially when they don't get a lawyer and they go with the public defender. They plead guilty, they call me about 2 or 3 weeks later, and they say, you know, I really regret it. Can I withdraw the plea? And believe it or not, there are ways to do that, okay? A lot of guys call me and tell me, I pled guilty, can I appeal it now? And this is like a year ago, it's too late. After a few weeks or a month, it's too late to, you know, you can try to do it, but it's too late at some point. There's a certain point where the judge or whatever, the law, just says, listen, it's done, you know? But I always get this horrible thing where the people are facing, like I said, very serious offenses. And they start looking at me and they start saying, you know, like casino talk, you know, what do you think my odds are? You know, what, you know, and I'm telling the guy, you can walk away right now with diversion, you know, but if you want to fight it, I'll fight it with you. No problem. Okay. But I'm afraid. I mean, I feel so guilty, to be honest, that if I tell the guy, let's fight it, and I convince him, like, you know, kind of half push him, you know, he's asking me what to do. So I tell him my advice, let's fight it. And he's unsure, and I tell him, it's okay, don't worry. And then God help us if we lose, and now he's facing, I don't know, a year, 2 years, 3 years in jail or something, the guy's going to really, he's going to be upset. He's going to be very disappointed with the results. And this is like the casino. It's totally unknowable, you know? You look at it now and you say, oh, it's so obvious. Of course Apple went up. That's not true. If it was so obvious, then everyone would have invested in it, you know?
Right. No doubt about that.
You know, when Akamai was selling for 30 cents or whatever, Tom, I had bought it at $40.
Right.
I felt like a complete schmuck. I was so angry. I was like, I couldn't believe it. Can you imagine, like, somehow in my brain at that moment, I say, well, it's 32 cents. This is a historic buying opportunity. I'm going to buy a zillion shares, you know? I mean, it's very hard to do that. People want to buy when the market is rising, you know? If you look in recent history, 2008 was the great buying opportunity of a generation. I mean, seriously, Tom, if you had had, you know, some of your money or credit or whatever, you could have taken almost any amount of money and bought some of these stocks that were really, really depressed at that time. Amazon, for example, or
right.
Apple, or any of them. Even Apple was way down at that point. 2008 was a meltdown. People were saying at the time, the whole world economy is shot, okay? Here it is, what, 9 years later? And these stocks have gone up 1,000% and 2,000%. But the question is, do you have the guts to look it right in the face? And when everything is going down and everyone is unloading everything, are you the one who can be strong and buy and buck that trend? That's very hard to do.
Those are the people who become billionaires.
I understand. But think about how difficult it is when you talk about it. Another great movie was The Big Short, which I think you've seen.
Steve Carell.
There you go.
Yeah.
This movie talks about these guys who were saying that the mortgage, you know, market, everything was going to collapse, and that had never happened before, literally, and they were betting on it happening. And the, you see in the movie that people were telling them, what the hell are you guys talking about? This is absurd. It will never happen.
Of course, some of the people who were betting on that were behind the crash.
That's the joke.
They were selling this stuff, these bonds,
sure,
to their own customers, and then on when the customers weren't looking, betting against them.
They were literally, Tom, it's so much even worse than that. They were literally on the phone with you, selling you the shares, and as they hung up the phone, having sold you the shares, they shorted the shares that they just sold you.
Right.
I mean, can you comprehend that?
Well, I can.
No, but I'm your broker, okay? It's different when I'm your lawyer. I'm your fiduciary. I'm responsible to you. But when I'm your broker, there is some of that, too. I don't want you to lose money. I'm supposed to help you make money.
Right.
And I'm taking a commission and recommending a stock to you and making money and selling it to you, and I know you're giving me your life savings. And as soon as we hang up, I make a bet, a short, against what I just sold you? That's beyond. That's insane. Seriously, you've got to be completely conscienceless. And I saw a very...
But I think these guys are conscienceless.
I guess so.
I mean, they're trying to sell... I had a call on the show this week from a guy. It was on Money Monday. A guy called up and said that he had a friend who was an insurance salesman.
Right.
And his friend, the insurance salesman, wanted to have dinner with him to talk to him about life insurance.
But he's not married and he has no kids.
and by the way, he thinks his friend just wants to have dinner with him.
Yeah, well.
So his own friend is trying to collect anywhere from a 5 to 8.5% commission on the dinner they're having.
Not such a good friend.
No.
It's so far out if you think about it, you know.
People have a hard time saying, I've been duped. This guy, I thought he was my friend. He's really trying to sell me life insurance.
Well, it's very hard to know, you know, obviously people's, you know, what's the word, true motivations, I guess. I'm taught as a lawyer to be the fiduciary of my client, which means that I'm responsible to him and I'm supposed to have his best interests in mind.
Right.
And I'm supposed to put that ahead of my financial interest personally.
Right.
Which means even worse, that if I don't, I'm actually in conflict.
Right.
I'm actually in conflict. I cannot represent him if I'm involved in his transaction in some way.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've got a conflict of interest. It might have my interest over his or something like that.
Right.
Or even if it's the appearance of that.
Right.
A broker, nothing. Go ahead, bombs away. Right?
Right.
That's nuts. That's absolutely nuts.
That's exactly. And by the way, that's what's been happening at the White House, in case you haven't been paying attention to your boy there.
Yeah, my boy.
Your boy.
And you voted for Hillary Clinton. You're proud of that?
I am.
Okay, I'm going to let that slide.
I am.
You know, you told me that she would never be president.
Yeah, because
you know what, Tom?
You
were
right. Well, then going back in time, yes, that's true.
So you see, in the end, it actually worked.
Yes. Exactly. But I know.
Anyway, so tell me about the conflict. I'm dying to hear.
Which
about Trump's conflict.
Oh,
the
no,
White
no,
House.
Not said. The conflict. What they're doing is they are more executive orders that are saying that your financial advisor does not have your best interest
at
heart.
Of course, of course.
I mean,
you're right. I mean, and I don't know if this is good or bad or who knows what, but there was some idea, right, to suggest that a financial advisor, a licensed one, ought to be a fiduciary, sort of like a lawyer. So they have your best interest in mind. You know, when you use a real estate agent, it's the same.
Right.
A real estate agent doesn't necessarily have your best interest at all.
Well, by the way, they might or might not. You don't know.
Yeah, but they're not considered a fiduciary.
Right.
If they bet against you and get you a higher interest rate or a lower price for your house or whatever, and by the way, they're vested in the financial interest of selling your house.
Let's look at the other things they do. You're new in the community, and you say to your realtor, gee, I don't know a good inspector. Do you know one?
Hell yeah, here he is.
Oh, I got one right here. And I got that kickback coming once you pay the inspector. Yes. And there's no laws against this.
No, that's a fact.
People do this all the time. They have the people coming in and evaluating the house, inspecting the house.
The problem with the broker, in terms of the stockbroker or whatever, is that sometimes they do lose money, maybe half the time. So people would be suing them all the time, saying, you know, every time they lose, you know, it was a conflict and you tricked me, and who the hell knows? That would probably create a zillion lawsuits, which I guess is good for lawyers.
Right. So what you really need to do, but people, you know, as usual, don't read, don't pay attention, don't do homework. What you really need to do is you need to know going in that the only thing the broker's there to do is sell you a house and earn a commission.
Right.
And that's it. You need an inspector? Go to Yelp and find an inspector. Never go to a realtor and ask that kind of question.
You mentioned this also, I think in maybe yesterday or the week before on Money Monday or something, you were talking about when you get a loan on a car or lease or whatever, that you go to the one in the dealership. You go to their finance department.
Right.
And they're going to put the screws to you.
Right.
You'd be a lot better going to a bank or a credit union, right, on your own. You know, and you had a guy calling from like some small state somewhere, and he was talking about is there a Citibank in your state?
Yeah, he was Lawton, Oklahoma.
Okay, but even if you're from Oklahoma, it doesn't matter. if there's no Bank of America there, you can still use Bank of America.
Right.
I mean, people got mortgages with banks from any state.
Well, all you
matter.
Have to do is simply, and it's something I've discussed on Money Monday before, you go to the website called Bankrate.com.
Yeah,
you
shopping find, credit cards.
Right. You find the lowest interest rate on, for example, a home loan. And these can be credit unions five states away. Whoever has the lowest rate. You go to them and see if you can get your mortgage.
Right, but that's shopping, you see. That takes a little bit of effort.
Well, yeah, same thing with car loans. And that guy who called in from Lawton, Oklahoma, he's in the military.
Right.
He's paying 10% on a car loan.
What a heartbreak.
He could be getting 3% right now.
Okay, but the question is, why isn't any of this taught like in school?
I hate to tell you, and maybe it's a conspiracy theory,
yeah.
Adam. I think that is done by design.
Really?
I think we keep people ignorant about how to balance a checkbook, how to understand how finance charges are computed.
And that's the banking foundations or something?
There is some way. Look who is on boards of education.
Yeah.
When I was a kid in the Bronx going to PS70, somehow the Dollar Savings Bank of all banks, was chosen to come into my classroom and teach kids about passbook savings accounts.
The Totten Trust account.
Now, the thing is, my account was in trust for me and had named my two parents,
right.
Which came in very conveniently when
they needed the mortgage money.
That's right. But, the fact is...
Yeah, I know you, Tom. I was paying attention.
I understand. Well, how in the world... did the Dollar Savings Bank get to come in? Not the Dime Savings Bank.
But that was a good thing. They were teaching you to save. That was a great lesson for you.
Right. Here's the point.
But you opened
though.
Your passbook at that bank.
They only right.
Right.
And until my parents took all of my money,
well, that's another story.
Then my account was at the Dollar Savings Bank,
right.
And it stayed there as long as I lived in the Bronx.
They show that's like cigarette brands. Once you open an account, you keep it for like 25 years. But the thing is, when I think of all the useless things that I learned in school, seriously, and I think about some of it, I can't believe that it was such a waste of time. And you think about the real things that you're actually going to deal with in life, which is having to work in groups, dealing with relationships, banking issues, like you say, loans, finance charges, how to buy a car, how to buy a house, right? These are like never discussed at all. And in a way, your school, PS70 or whatever, I don't know why they bought that particular bank, but you know what?
Because the bank got, got 300 accounts for seven-year-olds.
Fair enough. But if you think about it, they didn't screw you over. They actually did something positive for you.
No, but they taught us what it was to their benefit to teach.
Right. That's the enlightened self-interest, right?
They didn't teach us how a mortgage is amortized or how to balance a checkbook. They wanted to get revenue in. They wanted to borrow your money at 5.5% interest, which you kill to get today.
Actually, in those days.
Right. But
even those days, though, you were losing money because if you were getting paid 5.5% interest, but the rate of inflation was higher than that, you were actually operating at a deficit.
In some years it was higher, and in some years it wasn't. But the point is, you weren't losing money the way you kept it in a piggy bank.
Right.
You were making up some of the lost ground.
You're basically giving money to the Federal Reserve, and that's about it.
But why don't we teach people how to balance a checkbook? Why don't we teach people that when you borrow money, for example, to buy a house, the loan is what they call amortized, where they front-load all the interest.
Okay, by the way, that's called the Rule of 78.
The Rule of 78,
right.
And that's because the numbers 1 through 12 add up to 78.
Right.
So if you had a one-year loan, it's 12 78ths of the total interest you'll pay in the first month, 11 78ths in the second month, and 10 78ths.
You know why that's really funny, especially?
Why?
Because if you get a 30-year mortgage, right?
Right.
And let's say after, about half, like 15 years or 17 years or 18 years, right?
Yeah.
You sell the house, right?
Right.
Now, you would think that they would be upset because they'd say, well, we didn't get those extra 12 years, right? You closed the mortgage early. Actually, it's good for them. Because during that 18 years that you've been paying the mortgage, you've been paying 90% interest.
You gave away the free ride you were about to get for the remainder of the loan.
That's right. The remainder of the loan was the part that was for you.
Right.
And now you're saying, I'm going to pay it back early. They're going, hey,
bring
it on.
People making two payments a month.
Yeah, there you go.
I want to pay that down.
Oh, that's such stupidity.
By the way, a much smarter way to do it is to take that extra mortgage payment that you pay, or half a payment or whatever,
right,
and just invest it.
Right? Put it in anything.
Yeah.
Put it in an index fund.
Right.
Okay? Don't forget, your mortgage interest, as bad as it is, you can write off on your taxes.
Mm-hmm.
That still exists. That's one kind of interest that you can still write off.
Right.
So, you write off your mortgage interest, you put whatever money you extra have into any Vanguard, whatever index
right.
fund. It's going to index with the market, so you're going to get 4%, 6%, 8%, something. Right.
right?
You're way ahead of the game.
Exactly right.
Of course.
That's exactly
but instead
right.
Instead, you're handing it to the bank, and the bank is going, what a schmuck.
Well, we don't teach anybody.
yeah.
You know, when they say, let's go into the manager's office and talk about LoJack, you're about to get fucked with no Vaseline, baby. You're going right in dry.
I know, but the thing that you've always said, and this is also Lycus' philosophy, was that it was women that didn't understand finances and didn't care about finances. Tom, hold on. Let's be fair. Guys don't seem to get it either.
Well, guys
Seriously.
Get it better than women.
Well, that's not saying very much.
No, I understand, but the real truth is that this whole country needs an education about
and you sincerely believe that there's some hidden hand somewhere that stops us from learning it in school or whatever?
Absolutely.
That withholds the information?
Yes.
Because it is out there. It's on the internet if you look for it.
Yes, but to teach it in school, you'd have to hire teachers who are specialists in that field. And then I do believe that there are, lobbyists afoot.
That's what I mean.
To keep that stuff from getting taught. I do believe that.
That's fascinating. If you type Google right now, you got the computer. If you type the rule of 78, right?
Yeah.
That's going to have 15 articles, I presume. It's not like a secret.
It is. But, people hate arithmetic. They hate math. They hate it. Women, even more than men, but both men and women, hate doing that kind of homework.
But you work so hard.
Look at the people who call here and say, Tom, I got a great deal because I'm paying $199 a month.
Yeah, right, without knowing.
How many months?
Yeah, yeah.
And they don't even know how many years they're paying.
What kills me, and this is something, again, I've seen people sit there with their bill from a restaurant, and they got overcharged by $2, and they make a scene. And little things, you know what I mean? I had some guy I owed, $20, and he was, following me around until I paid him, And yet, as you say, they throw away huge amounts, tens of thousands and whatever on this mortgage shit you're talking about,
right.
This interest rates. It's like somehow you're like what they call penny wise and pound foolish. You're very aware of your finances. You realize you don't make a lot. You're being very careful and stingy with yourself.
Right.
And then on the other hand, you're doing things that are completely counterproductive.
Well,
it's amazing.
The only way it makes sense for most people to buy a condo or buy a house is to pay it off.
Yeah, of course.
Here's why.
If you're going to, first of all, you live in there the rest of your life.
But let me talk about what that results in, okay? I just looked at Zillow. You've seen my house.
Of course.
I just looked at Zillow. And according to Zillow,
this is the house that you're going to sell.
Well,
because of all the crazy neighbors.
I'm not selling it right now, but I mean, at some point.
I'm working on you, Tom. You had said that you would never sell it.
Be careful what you wish for.
Now, you told me that
you're... Be careful what you wish for, because you'll never see me in this studio again if I live 125 miles from here.
We can do the show from there. You told me that... I love the fact that we would be doing it on solar power, okay?
Yeah.
But you told me that your executors are selling the house in Hollywood.
Well, and by the way, that is still the plan.
I know.
I'm not taking less. I always say people coming to my door, if the first number isn't a four, it's been nice knowing you.
So what does Zillow have to say? Did Zillow put a four?
No, I'm talking about what I could get for rent. They
said rent,
that based on the area,
okay,
based on the size of my house,
$8,400
a month.
I wonder if that makes sense. Probably not.
Well, wait a minute. That's like $100,000 a year.
Yeah, I guess. Okay. That's not so bad, right?
Right. So, here's the deal.
There are people who pay that much.
That's what they said.
That's fascinating.
Think of it as a dividend.
This on Airbnb?
No, Zillow.
No, but I mean, would you put your house on Airbnb?
No, I would probably rent it through a realtor.
Hmm.
Not Airbnb. Airbnb, you're going to have a new... deadbeat
every month,
every week, every day. No, I would sign people to leases, and have them put a big deposit down.
Right.
And fly drones over to make sure.
$100,000 a year.
Right, $100,000 a year. So that's my dividend. So I paid $624,000 for the house.
Right, that's a long
and another
time ago.
$2 million to renovate.
Fix it up, right.
And so I paid approximately $2.6 million. What did I get for that? I am getting free rent in a place that I could get $8,400 a month. If I wanted to live in a house like that, I'd have to pay $8,400 a month. I'm paying zero.
And you own it outright.
I own it outright.
Okay.
Now, what I'm saying is that is when a house can be a good investment.
Right.
But it is not a good investment when you put 0% down.
Yeah, well, come on.
And you're saying, come on, the average person falls for that.
The reason that in particular your house was a good investment is because it appreciated so much since when you bought it. One of the reasons that people were putting zero down in the countrywide days is because the thinking was that the market was ever going up.
But nothing.
So
nothing.
Yeah, I know that.
Goes up forever.
Of course.
What goes up must come down.
Of course. But the theory had been that you put zero down, the house is going to go up so much in the next few years that you will have equity. Because the equity will be the rising price of the house. That's like flipping houses. That's the whole conversation.
Right. But the problem is that most people who do that are not real estate experts.
Right.
And they do not know when prices are going to go up
or
down.
I got news for you. The experts don't know.
Well, put it this way. Some people are better at it than others. Yeah, for example, right now, Berkshire Hathaway is also a real estate company.
Right.
And is going out and buying entire tracts. They're buying every house on a block.
No, that's right.
And
They're doing it in like what's called a REIT.
Right.
Real Estate Investment Trust, which is, by the way, sometimes people invest in those. You don't talk about those very often.
I'm invested in one, Starwood Property Trust.
There you go.
Yes. But what I'm saying is the average person does not know enough to successfully invest in that complicated an investment.
Of course not. Jesus.
And by the way, when you're borrowing it at no money down, you know, you have to like be very, very lucky, and all the stars have to align in order to get lucky and make that profit. And even then, people don't understand all the expenses of owning a house.
Well, that's like people that buy those timeshares. There was a movie about it, this very rich guy who's the one who does all those, you know, timeshare things in Vegas and Florida and all this. It's called the Queen of I can't even remember what it's called. Silly movie. But the point is that they were showing how people go to Vegas and they get these hard sells.
Right.
And they buy a timeshare. And it was the Queen of Versailles. That was what it was called.
One of the best of those kinds of pieces of fiction. South Park did an episode about Aspen.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And it was about timeshares
roped
into
these. But getting into the timeshare, you then have to pay maintenances and all these other things. And there are blackouts, so when you want it, it's not available and all this kind of stuff. There's all kinds of BS that goes on.
And if a pipe leaks in your timeshare, you have like 1/52nd of the responsibility if there's a lawsuit.
Right.
Right, if you have 1 week,
you have
1/26th if you have 2 weeks.
Jesus.
So you could be sued along with 25 other people.
I don't know. The guy was a billionaire, so I think that he was doing very well doing something.
Right.
And it was kind of hard to explain. They asked him to explain what he does, and he couldn't really explain it so well.
Most people don't want to do any homework. For example, why would you want to buy a hotel room and pay interest on it like a mortgage?
Right.
What is the benefit there?
Because you're thinking that you're going to go, right?
Yeah,
and it's a nice room.
What if you went to a hotel every year?
Well, I'd like the flexibility of doing that.
But you that's the thing. Why would you want to be required? You know, I don't know if you've seen some hotels after 10, 20 years, minimal maintenance.
And they look run down.
Yes.
The old Tropicana.
Well, I stayed at one of these places. Let's just say one of these places that was advertising on my show, and I was not endorsing it.
In what city?
Maui.
Oh, okay.
And when I got there, one of the problems that this building had, which they never mentioned in the commercial, was that the beach had eroded so much, there was no beach.
Oh, it was gone.
Yeah, so what you had was you had a concrete slab and a pool and then fall off a cliff into the water.
The ocean.
Yeah, that was what they had.
The whole beach was gone.
Right. And inside, this building had been built like 20, 25 years before. It needed a paint job. The carpet was fraying.
Of course.
And there were people who are stuck for the rest of their lives sharing time.
Oh, was it? Oh my God, it was a timeshare.
It was a timeshare.
Oh, even worse.
So the place said, we'll put you in one of the units we're selling. And
so you
can see what it's like.
Oh,
and
man.
I got in there, and it was a beautiful view out the window. But if you thought you were going to Hawaii, you'd go to the beach, guess again.
Yeah, no beach.
No beach.
Oh, man.
None.
Wow.
So, when you buy a timeshare, you are going to pay it like a mortgage. They're going to calculate all your payments, and they're going to calculate some simple interest, and they're going to amortize it over the course of that loan.
Well, that's the killer right there.
Yeah. I mean, when I stay at the Hampton Inn, I'm not paying interest on the price of staying there.
Right.
And people are so dumb and so unwilling to you give the better them.
You're saying the wrong word.
Dumb.
They're not dumb.
Dumb.
They don't understand.
Who would make an investment like that without doing some research?
I think that people respond to high pressure sales tactics. And when they give you this thing where they give you the free day in Vegas or whatever, the free tickets to a show or whatever, free room, whatever the hell they give you, and you go to this con, you figure, I'll sit there for an hour, big deal. And they really put the screws to you.
Right.
You can't leave without signing.
Right.
So I think,
and the
other people are signing.
Puerto Vallarta, and you're going whale watching.
They're using psychology on you, let me tell you.
$30 tickets, and they do that to get you in a room and lock the door.
Yeah.
Know?
Well, there you go. Look at how many people get brainwashed with,
fools. All of them. Idiots.
Okay, so let me ask you. Let's get back to law for a second.
Yes.
Do you take the deal for a year and a half in jail, assuming, God forbid, Tom, you were charged with a federal offense, or do you take a trial, because you know you're innocent, on the off chance that you might get 20 years?
If I know I have the right attorney.
Oh, God.
This is what it comes down to.
Oh, jeez.
Well,
now I'm going to have a stroke in the hallway.
Well, if you have the right attorney. And look, if the attorney says you should fight this, I have to have faith in that
guy. He's not going to jail.
By the way, my case in Boston, the attorney wanted me to go to court and fight that.
Oh, my God.
In Boston, when the district attorney was running for re-election.
Yeah, look how much shit you ate because you took it, you know?
It didn't hurt my career one iota.
I understand, but if you had fought it and won, that would have been justice.
You know, I told you what my agent, Mr. Buckwell, I told you what he said to me.
Tom, slavery was outlawed in 1865.
No, that was my attorney in Miami in 1984.
Oh,
my agent, Mr. Don Buckwell.
Said, Tom, don't say yes so fast. Let's see the details.
No, and here's what he said to me. He quickly, I didn't lose my job. I was working.
Uh-huh.
But I said, that's it. I've had enough of living in this place.
Okay.
Get me back to L.A. Yeah. And so he got me the deal at Westwood One.
Best thing that ever happened to you.
Not only was the best thing that ever happened to me, he got on the phone and he said to me about me and my wife at the time. He said, you guys should have used handguns. I could have gotten you the spot after Letterman.
See? That would have been even better.
Right.
I didn't even think of that.
That's what he said.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if that was such a good idea.
No, so people always try to dredge this shit up because it lives on the internet forever. But
Mr. Buckwell's got a good sense of humor. I always like that about him.
I mean, tens of millions of dollars later, I think everything turned out okay.
I understand. I'm just saying, even if you, and this is why it's good for me to talk to you about this, you know, even if you have a lot of confidence in your lawyer, and let's say it's me, I don't know that I can live with myself, you know, advising you to go to trial, and God forbid, Tom, it goes against us.
By the way, many attorneys do not tell you to go to trial. They say,
oh, yeah, hell yeah.
Don't take a chance.
Yeah.
You never know what judge you're going to get.
The jury, who knows? Yeah.
Jury might hate you.
Yeah.
Might hate your show.
It's not a joke. Tom, it's not a joke. And that's where the whole, you know, take the deal public defender thing comes from.
Well, my attorney in Boston told me that we should fight it. He said,
really?
A, you're innocent. B, your wife not only agrees that you're innocent, she will not testify.
Right.
And even though they say they can press the case, without her testimony, it's going to be hard to prove.
But what would you have faced being convicted, a year?
Probably a year, but a year and then with good behavior out in a shorter period of time.
So
but the point is,
can you imagine?
Well, it turned out that I had this amazing job offer and I had to report to work.
Yeah, of course.
So I took the diversion and I took the, the 6 months of having a lesbian teach me about what a misogynist
but
I am.
But you're also forever on, what's that called? The website with
Megan's Law?
No, with you. There's your case somewhere.
Oh, Smoking Gun.
Thank you.
But I don't care. You know what? I talk about
that's
it
That's for
freely.
Life, Tom. That sucks.
That's fine. I don't care. You know what?
What if your profession was different? What if it's something
that
would have really embarrassed
maybe
you?
You know what? If my profession was different, I probably might have made a different decision, gone to fight for my name.
Yeah.
But I was in a business where, G. Gordon Liddy had a job.
Right.
Tanya Harding had a radio show.
Right.
Cato Kalin had a radio show. So
Mario Cuomo.
Being notorious is not a bad thing. Frank Rizzo, the mayor of Philadelphia, had a radio show.
Really?
A friend of mine was his boss.
That I did not know.
Yes.
That's a joke.
Frank Rizzo did Afternoon Drive at WPHT in Philadelphia.
Fabulous.
That's true.
I guess anything's possible.
And he was, you know, let's just
he
say.
He was connected.
He was unclean.
Yes.
Yes. So, you know, the fact is, in radio business, all they care about is, can you get people to write your name in the Arbitron diary?
I'm with you. That's different.
It's not like, you know, you're going to be working with a station wagon full of nuns. You're working with a bunch of people.
I understand. You know, the average person is not in that profession.
That's why I'm not making recommendations.
I understand, but I'm talking brass tacks. Even if a person has a lot of confidence in me, it's horrible. It's a horrible choice to make. To be innocent and to plead guilty is a terrible thing.
Would you ever tell someone to do that?
No. But they they do sometimes. No, I wouldn't.
No? In Boston, I was told to fight it, and I said, I've got to report to Culver City to start doing the show.
Well, that's a terrible choice.
I don't want to be commuting or taking a month off, and I certainly don't want to be losing.
No, 6 months off. I had a guy a few months ago who couldn't deal with it. He didn't want to go through with it. It wasn't the death penalty. It was some nonsense, driving without a license or suspended license or something. So he didn't get in that much trouble. But he told me the story, and he was innocent.
Right.
He really was innocent.
Yeah.
And he said, you think we should fight it? I said, yes. We went into court, and we stood there in front of the judge and whatever, and he crapped in his pants. We took a recess. He started talking to me. We took a recess. And he said, I can't go through with it. I can't. Sorry, I can't. I was so angry.
Yeah.
I said, well, the hell with you, man. You're gonna go plea. I'm leaving. I'm not gonna help you plea if you're innocent. And he's like, oh, you gotta stand by me, man. I can't deal with it. I just can't deal with it. I got him a good deal. But that was a guy who was innocent.
Right.
It wasn't like, you know, a multiple murder case or something, but still, there's something that, you know, is fundamentally unfair about that. And your domestic violence case is really, really awful to read, Tom, because it's such a joke. It's so ridiculous.
Well, they made up, as you see, as police do, and you've talked about it.
No.
They made up a lot of shit and put it in the report.
But it would have. I could see defending. And I didn't know you in those days, but I could see defending that case in Boston or whatever the hell it was and winning. It wasn't an airtight case. It was shitty.
Right.
And stupid.
And by the way, my attorney was recommended to me by people who know.
Okay.
And he was one of the best in Boston.
And he wanted to go.
He wanted to go.
Well,
he wanted me to go.
Yeah. I don't know how you make a choice like that.
He did say he didn't blame me because I had this multi-million-dollar contract to come to L.A. and start doing a new radio show.
Listen, in retrospect, I think you did the right thing. But it's a very, you got to admit, it's one of the toughest choices ever in your life. It's very tough.
Well, also, again, if you're in my kind of profession, it's a little easier.
That's
decision
a consideration.
Because being notorious, as Mr. Buchwald pointed out, being notorious these days is not a drawback.
Yeah.
It frequently is an advantage.
Yeah. Well, if you were working.
Look at that piece of shit, Bo Deedle. You ever see that guy? It was on the Imus show for like 100 years.
Oh, God.
He did Carl's Jr. commercials. And this guy, who, you know, I consider the guy to be a worm, this guy was on TV and radio and doing reality shows and had no shortage of employment.
What was his background?
Well, he used to do the dirty work. You know how people in the detective business, they do the real dirty work? and if you read if you look up Bo Deedle's name, you'll see his entire curriculum vitae. you know, he did the dirty work that most people don't want to touch.
Thank God.
Yeah. Take a look.
Fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
So we're in great company being on the radio.
Well, we're not on the radio, but...
Right. That's right.
But put it this way, even better when you own your own business.
Right.
No one's ever going to fire me.
By the way, that's another factor. I mean, I guess when it comes down to it, if you have a certain background... You had a guy on a couple hours ago who answered the phone with Dino, and he immediately said when he came on the air that he was a convicted felon or whatever. I mean, you have to start your own business. You know, you're not going to get most jobs.
Right.
It's sad.
Yes.
You know, if you go to jail and you pay your debt to society, you know, after a few years you get out, you're supposed to start again, right? And you go get any shitty job, and they tell you, oh, geez, you've got a criminal record, we can't hire you. That's cruel.
Exactly right.
That compels you to start your own business.
Right.
So who knows?
But, you know, as far as I'm concerned, it's the best possible situation. You know, I'll never drive drunk again, but I will say this, if I were ever caught doing something like that, I would not have to worry that my reputation was ruined or anything, because I am my own boss.
Right. That's
so
true.
As soon as I'm done with the court case, I'm coming back. I'm going to continue. That's what's going
to happen. No, but you and I now, you know, doing what we do here, are being called, I mean, I've been called misogynist, racist, whatever, and that doesn't really matter to me, you know, in the same way that you're talking about.
Right.
I mean, but I saw these things in, like, England or Sweden or something. If, you know, you get called a misogynist or whatever because, you know, you're Islamophobe because you don't want migrants or whatever to come to your country, you can lose your job.
Right.
I mean, you're going to, you know, they have this whole kind of culture of, like, you know, oh, my God, you're a racist. Get out of here, you know. So
people still need to make a living. I think that's the stupidest mentality. Because, for example, let's say you have children and you were abusing your wife and physical abuse. Terrible.
Right. Terrific.
Hey, I don't want people to get confused when they hear my name. Anyone who commits assault like that should be making big rocks and a little rocks.
But have you and I ever said otherwise?
Well, no,
ever.
But that doesn't mean people don't think of us, about us.
I have never, ever justified domestic violence in a million years.
Yeah, but people will say
horrified
that,
by
people
it.
Will say that you did, if only to discredit you. That's what they do.
Well, that's false.
Understood. And I could spend the rest of my life filing lawsuits against people who say these things about me, but what is the point? Go ahead and say, you can't hurt me. You can't hurt me.
Yeah, but you know that one of the tactics...
I confess to so much dirt.
You do know...
What did I not confess?
But one of the tactics, and you listen, it did happen to you, actually, you know, where someone didn't like what you were saying and went after your advertisers.
Right.
And that, and by the way, I was one of your advertisers. I got a letter from them.
Right.
And they said, you don't want to be on the Tom Likas show. He's a piece of crap and a liar and a misogynist or whatever. I don't respond to that, obviously. But, I mean, that is the tactic today. I know people that, you know, did things that, you know, people contacted their boss.
Right.
And, you know, they work for a big company
You know? I do that. You know, I do that.
What have you done?
Somebody, this just happened to me the other day. So somebody
I'm afraid to hear
who
something.
Doesn't like my politics regarding the current administration,
okay,
who I don't do business with, who I don't know who he is, he's in Minnesota, wrote me this big, long fucking letter telling me, you know, get on the train, and then it was like a lot of abusive language.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, Joe Blow at... Oh my God.
Real name of the company. .com. Jeez, what a fool.
So I took that letter and I contacted.
And he really was crazy, threatened you and stuff?
Right. And by the way, I had his direct dial number and his email address.
What an idiot.
So I called the human resources department.
Oh my God.
I said, I want
to. Did you do it on their stationery?
Well, no, it's an email. But
I understand.
But it had their name.
Yeah.
I said, is this what your company represents? Is this what.
Oh, jeez.
And. I put it this way.
He's a dead
if that
duck.
Guy is still employed, I'll be very surprised.
Wow, Tom. That's some cold shit, Tom.
I do that.
How far did he go, though? I mean, he threatened your life? I mean, what was his...
No,
what was the gist?
No, but it was...
Getting the guy fired, that's pretty heavy.
And put it this way. Motherfucker. But but again, you know, you can just say, I don't agree with you. I don't agree with what you think.
Yeah, of course.
I don't like what you say. You can say all those things. But when you say I'm a piece of shit and you start going into graphic detail about what you'd like to see happen to me, then I think I'm within my rights to call the company and say, is this your corporate policy, saying things like this to people?
That's going
to
fix him. I mean, if it was any kind of big Fortune 500 or whatever, that's it. He's
good luck,
he's a goner.
Buddy. Yeah.
Jeez.
Come and get me.
I don't like them casting dispersions on the company or whatever.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Well, this idiot was telling me, I wrote to him to say, don't ever write to me again.
Really?
And he wrote back to say, I could say anything I want.
Oh, yeah, guess again.
Yeah. All right.
Really?
Now you're tempting me.
I had one that I called him. Also stupid, I think, of me. But I called him and I said, listen, I'm going to give you one chance to say you're sorry. Okay? Mm-hmm. I want you to say to me now that you didn't mean it and you overreacted and you're sorry. Okay?
Right.
And he said, you know, F you. So I let him have it.
Yeah.
I did give him a chance, though.
You know, I gave this guy a chance. I called him and said, don't ever write to me again.
Fair enough.
I don't, by the way, the Canned Spam Act, I've never done business with you. You don't have the right to send me this mail. I'm telling you to take me off your list. Don't send me this stuff anymore. And he said that he had every right to do it. Okay. Let's find out.
Oh, jeez.
Let's find out if you have any right to do that. Okay.
Well, that's really destructive.
Let's take a break here because we haven't taken one yet.
Thanks, Tom.
Much less a phone call.
Well, we just went off.
We did. That's okay.
For sure.
Adam is here in his guise as criminal defense attorney, Adam Sachs. So if you've been arrested, if you've been threatened with arrest, if you were pulled over for a DUI or a drug bust, or maybe somebody accused you of doing something even worse... All right, you need to talk to Adam right now, and Adam will give you free legal advice. But all you have to do is call right now. And here's the phone number. It's 901-3000-TOM. 901-3000-TOM on this bonus hour of the Tom Likas Show. It's 901-3000-866.
The entire Tom Likas experience in your pants.
Get the app now.
901-3000-TOM. This is the Tom Likas Show.
The Tom Likas Show at the New Normal Studios in Burbank. A bonus hour with our friend criminal defense attorney Adam Sachs. And he'll answer a legal question for you at 901-3000-TOM. 901-3000-866. Dino told me earlier that you wanted me to call you. And I was not able to call anyone while doing the show. So it was regarding the question from a guy named Michael in Irving, Texas. We were talking about immigration.
Right.
Do you remember what you wanted me to ask you or talk to you about?
I think I was upset about that lady, I think. She was legal or a citizen and the husband wasn't or something.
Right.
She kept saying that she had spoken to lawyers.
Yeah.
But I don't think she spoke to anyone who knew what they were doing. Because it got corrected because actually someone called in.
Right.
That guy who called was dead right. Okay? And she was arguing with him in the end.
Right.
But before he called, I was climbing the walls because she was saying how her husband got, like, arrested at some point years ago, and therefore he can never get a citizenship or he can't get it for 10 years or something. And the whole story was like, woe is me, what am I going to do? I'm so scared. And the truth is that I could have fixed that one. And I'm not an expert in immigration law.
Mm-hmm.
I've done it a few times for friends or whatever as a hobby. But I could have fixed that one. Her husband should be able to get that set aside, and enough time has passed that he would be able to still get permanent residency and citizenship.
Yeah. By the way, I think no case is hopeless if you have the right attorney.
By the way, that's not a joke. And people, a lot of times, I don't know, they tell me I've been through 15 lawyers. But, you know, if you really talk to them, that doesn't mean they hired 15 lawyers. That means that they chatted up the secretary of 15 lawyers. Okay, I mean, when you call me and the number that I give out on the show and stuff, I actually talk to you. But most people don't. Most people call a lawyer and they talk to an intake department and a secretary, an assistant, a salesperson. They go through a whole thing, and you're talking to someone who doesn't really know the law.
Yeah.
And if you start telling them a long story, they go, "Oh, sir, I don't know if I can help you. That's kind of complicated. You know, we don't do cases like that."
By the way, you know, I've fired every attorney that wouldn't take my call. That, to me, is the number one thing.
Now, what does that mean? That doesn't call you back?
Doesn't even call me back. Calls me back days later.
Oh, days later. Okay.
I will tell you an absolutely true story about an attorney. You probably heard me tell
the lady attorney.
Who had twins.
Right.
And you've seen this happen at big law offices.
Right.
Now she's going to telecommute. But don't worry, I'm going to do all my work at home.
Right.
And this was someone who had been responsive.
Yeah.
And this was someone...
So she had been terrific.
Terrific. At one of the, you know, one of the biggest law firms in America.
Right.
And based in West Los Angeles. And...
And she has a kid.
Twins.
Two kids.
Twins.
And see, but this is also a woman's story, Tom. She thought that she's going to be just fine. That she has the two kids, and she'll work in her house, and she'll telecommute,
right.
And it'll be cool. It's no big deal.
Okay? Well, here's
it's a very big deal.
Here's what happened. I was working at, let's just say, a big radio station here in town, and they were violating the terms of my contract.
Not good.
This station, which will go unnamed so I don't get sued, this station had a contract with me that said that I had a certain ratings threshold. If I were over the threshold... that I would get a bonus every time I hit that target.
Nice.
But I found out that the numbers they were providing me for the ratings were not the actual ring.
Oh, my God. What the hell is going on?
So I called...
Is that normal?
I called a friend of mine who worked at another radio station. I said, do you have the afternoon drive numbers? And he said, yes. I said, could you fax those over to me? We were on emailing at that time.
Oh, yeah.
So could you fax those to me? And he did. And I stepped into the program director's office. I want you to see this.
So wait a minute. So they're avoiding giving you the bonus by depressing the numbers.
I would miss by a tenth of a point or two-tenths of a point.
Unbelievable.
Maybe next time.
Yeah.
Maybe next time,
big boy.
Yeah. Well, no. Wasn't that station.
Oh, oops.
Nope. So they ended up having to pay me. But
yeah, I understand.
In the meantime,
you called her.
I was calling my attorney saying, you know,
I need help.
And my attorney, I'm getting her voicemail at her home with her kids crying in the background. And there finally came a time when I had to say, enough is enough. Let me know when and you hired a nanny.
call me when they're in preschool.
Yeah, or when they're 18 or whatever, not now. And so I had to get another lawyer in the firm.
Yeah. And always stay with the firm.
And that guy was my entertainment lawyer.
Right.
For, my God, it's been 30 years.
He's
been my entertainment attorney.
Wow.
Long
time. So the twins are all grown up.
By now.
Wow.
Mommy might be retired by now, for all I know.
I don't think Mommy was going back to work after that nonsense.
Oh.
I don't know how these women think they can, you know, have it all. What a joke. That's right. A real instructive story, what you just said. I mean, you know, if you had a different attitude, the firm could have lost you. You could have just said, the hell with you guys. I'm going to get someone else. I don't need this.
Well, the firm, as you know what firm it is, it's very good.
Right.
And again, this is their specialty, entertainment law.
I understand, but I'm just saying, you know, you were frustrated. You obviously called another, you know, senior partner and said, I want someone else. Okay,
I actually called someone else I knew there, and I said, you need to help me with this diplomatic issue here. You know, there's the gender issue here.
Women can have children. I've got nothing against it.
No, you can't.
Stop kidding around.
But if I'm paying you $700
an
hour,
no shit.
You answer the fucking phone.
Yeah, but you
want to get out of my life.
Hold on. You see, that's a matter of dishonesty for her.
Right.
The truth is she should not have been doing that anymore. She should have taken a maternity leave or something and raised her children properly, dealt with that, and, you know, practiced afterwards. The idea is she's telling you, oh, don't worry, Tom. Everything will be fine. Everything will be as normal.
That's what happens.
See, but that's stupidity.
Mm-hmm.
We're saying something in our world today. We're lying to women. We're telling them you can juggle it all. Okay, you're going to throw away your marriage. You're going to raise screwed-up kids, and you're going to totally screw up your job.
Right.
That's obvious.
Yes.
And a client like you that's paying a lot of money isn't going to put up with that shit. I don't want to hear kids crying in the background when I'm talking about, you know, life and death here.
Can I call you back was the most common phrase in those calls. And that was it. So what I'm saying is, you do what attorneys frequently don't do, and that is take the calls, return the calls promptly if you're in court. And I'm not unreasonable. Call me back tonight. That's fine. This one will call me 2-3 days later.
Yeah, that's unfair.
The radio station is continuing to stand by their premise that I did not reach the threshold.
Right.
Somebody needed to call but say, well, we're going to go to court and we're going to decide whether I hit the threshold or not. And
A lot of money was on the line. That's the unfair thing.
Tens of thousands of dollars. And,
so you're just going to forget?
So I ended up paying my attorney $1,000.
Whatever.
And I got tens of thousands of dollars as a result of doing it.
Well, that's just normal.
It's worth every penny.
Makes perfect sense.
So,
what I said about the immigration story that started this whole thing was, you know, people are not asserting their rights. We've talked about this in criminal law and all the other things we do.
Yep.
The reality is I talk to a lot of people that are in really screwed up situations that don't need to be.
Right.
And whether you like Trump or not, I'm sorry, Tom, he is the president now, and he is cracking down on immigrants.
Yeah.
Okay? And so if you are an immigrant, if you have a green card, you ought to get your citizenship. If you have some story of half a story that you don't have a permit or you haven't expired something or other, you really shouldn't leave it to chance.
Right.
Okay? If there's any chance of fixing it, you ought to fix it right now, okay? Because I think in a couple of more years, it's going to get tighter and tighter and tighter.
Yeah.
That's reality, okay?
Adam, how can people get in touch with you?
You can call me toll-free, 1-800-340-7320. That's 1-800-340-7320. You can check me out on Facebook and online at www.adamlawyer.com. And you can send me an email. And yes, Tom, I answer them myself. And no. It doesn't take me 3 days.
No, it doesn't.
Adam@adamlawyer.com.
All right. And by the way, if you missed your chance to call into Adam, don't worry. Adam will be back, as he is every Tuesday. Hear Adam Tuesday at 6 p.m. Pacific time, 9 p.m. Eastern time.
Free at TomEverywhere.com. Download the Tom Likas app
now. 901-3000 Tom.
This is the Tom Likas Show.
From the New Normal Newsroom, it's news for guys. I'm Gary Zeno.
Yes.
New app out that counts how many times men interrupt women. I don't know what it's supposed to prove. It's called Women Interrupted. It listens to conversations and it tracks how often women are interrupted by men.
Boy, I wonder what it would be with the opposite.
Well, it's time for you to get to the drawing board and get that app done.
I wouldn't interrupt them if they wouldn't. Would they just shut up?
Right.
You can't even get a word in edgewise a lot of times.
Exactly.
That's horrible.
If you shut up, I'm not going to interrupt. Stop talking.
That's horrible.
Yeah, she always going.
Yep, talking and talking and talking.
Jesus.
If you would just stop eating, dude, you could interrupt her.
I'd rather eat than hear.
Stop already.
God. This is coming from you, too. This is the most amazing thing. Oh, my God. Yeah,
well,
oh, my God.
Just saying. You don't have to put up with that.
Right. Ladies, just shut the fuck up, and then you can't complain about us interrupting.
Right. Now, what is this app going to prove? Now, she's going to stick it in your face and be like, see
the app says right. You interrupted. Yeah.
You know, it's a good, great solution to this, yeah. Which I figured out on Saturday.
Yes, please.
Is a Whataburger. Holy crap, though. That solves a lot of problems. I don't care what the person says.
Either she's eating it or you're
no,
eating it.
No, I'm eating it. Yeah. Tom, I'm
no,
telling
what
you.
I'm saying.
If we get even close to Whataburger, it's on me. Just so you guys know.
All right. How do we make that happen?
I'm telling you. There's
map
a,
that out.
I mean it, too. I mean it.
Fine, then. Rapper Vic Mensa, apparently, it's a trouble.
Is his name his destiny?
No,
and you're going to find out why. That's exactly why I put
this
story up.
He's been busted for gun possession.
In California. See, our friend had a gun permit, concealed carry permit, mm-hmm. in another state.
Yeah.
Anybody that knows
here, no.
anything, anybody knows anything about, especially if he went through the course and got the concealed permit in another state, everybody knows. Except in California, basically. I mean, it's like New York. It's impossible to get a gun permit here. Impossible.
Right, exactly.
So our friend thought he'd cruise around Beverly Hills, according to police, and having some tinted windows, and that's when our friend was informed that you can't have this hidden gun, dummy. Yeah. It doesn't work like that.
Some cyber hackers hacked a billboard in Mexico. And put a porn flick on it. It's a digital billboard, and it basically played a porn clip over and over again. Everybody was up in arms about it, so they sent the fire department out, and they sent...
Alvaro Jimenez Gonzalez.
Yeah, that guy. And he, in trying to turn the porn off, fell and died.
Yeah, he fell off the nice billboard.
Killed by
who
porn.
Who fucking who?
Killed by porn.
Well, no, I feel bad for him because, number one, he's a fireman up there
right.
trying to shut off porn.
Right.
You know, he didn't ask for this. They said, hey,
right.
do this.
Sometimes you got to rescue cats, and other times you got to turn off porn. We
right.
don't know.
I'm sure he didn't want to do it, but they told him to do it, and then he lost his footing and
yeah.
fell. It's the equivalent of falling over there in Lawndale off one of those billboards off the 405.
Those monster jobs, yeah.
And then
that'll kill you.
Off he goes.
Right, bingo. Finally, the Lakers have a new GM. His name is Rob Pelinka.
Yeah, this is big news. They brought in this dude, and he is basically... I guess he was spent 2 years or 20 years representing a lot of the NBA's top talent. So it's now
like Kobe Bryant, which might have something to do with it.
Well, that's pretty huge. And 20 years at doing it. I mean, the guy's no dummy to the game. So, yeah, congratulations to Rob Palenka.
Rob Marenko.
Rob Marenko. Oh, my God. I can't believe it.
There's plenty more at newsforguys.com. And, of course, you can find our podcast.
By the way, Rob Marenko has as much experience as Rob Palenka. Same number of letters. Palenka, Marenko.
Oh, my God. I can't believe that just happened.
From the New Normal Studios in Burbank, we're back to the Tom Likas Show right after this.
This is the New Normal.
Rob Palenka.
Rob Marenko.
Rob Marenko. Oh, my God. I can't believe it.